I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Ahoy Hoy, Nate Langson.
And me, not instigating a coup in West Africa, Ian Morris.
It's very good. I've actually been reading quite a lot about coups and uprisings recently, and they don't sound like something you'd want to be involved in.
No, not at all. Although I'd maybe be tempted to coup our current government out of power, but I don't think it's something I've really got the energy for.
What do you have the energy for these days?
Just about this, and that's it.
So the podcast and sleep.
Yeah, basically. It's really hard going to sleep, though. It takes a lot of energy. Really wears me out.
Do you find that the more tired you are, the harder it is to get to sleep?
Certainly can be. That's very true of children. If they get very, very tired, they will not sleep. And that is extremely bad news because they get grumpier and grumpier.
I used to get delirious. I literally delirious with excitement. I'd see all kinds of shapes and weird stuff and my mum would have to calm me down.
Well,
usually around birthdays and Christmases, but sometimes I think just general exhaustion.
Have you ever done something where, this used to happen to me at university, where you need to pull a 24-hour session to get something done. And there is a point in that 24-hour arc where it is just hilarious. It's so good. Like, it's like the hilarity that comes after, a certain amount of time after having smoked some cannabis. There's that hilarious phase where you just laugh. And it's the same if you stay up for 24 hours and work on something. You get, madness sets in. But it's very entertaining.
Interesting. Well, now we've ventured briefly into West African coups and drugs, I feel it's only appropriate to talk about actual news. The first of which, in fact, is a rare example of us discussing a Bloomberg story. But on this occasion, I do need to blur the lines and do so because this is just too interesting. My esteemed colleagues wrote this week that Vodafone has recently explored buying Three what, you may say? Three UK, the phone network. This is according to people with knowledge of the matter. Very knowledgeable are those people. Now, Vodafone expressed interest apparently late last year in acquiring its smaller, much smaller rival. It didn't lead to an agreement and isn't currently in active negotiation. This is something that's been speculated on for some time, right, Ian? I mean, not just because both companies have done something similar in other markets. I want to say Australia. I think that's one where they've tied up. But regulators in Britain have never been so keen on the idea. But if you look at what's been happening over the last few years, there's clearly evidence that that's not necessarily the case anymore, because we had BT. It bought EE and birthed a behemoth from its collective loins.
And I would not have believed that would be a possibility before, so...
Exactly. Last year, we had Virgin Media merge with O2, and from its loins was birthed yet another behemoth. And neither Vodafone, and certainly not Three individually, pose an insurmountable threat on their own to either of those two entities, but could compete more ambitiously as a single company, at least from my personal opinion. And I'm sure, Ian has views on that too. I was actually looking up the numbers when I was editing this story, because I didn't write the story, but I was editing some of the updates to it. And Vodafone has around, depending on where you draw the line, about 20 million customers. That's across mobile, fixed line, and broadband units. And Three is somewhere in the region of about between 9 and 9.5. So if you purely doubled them up, you're getting close to 30 million, which still isn't as big as some of the competitors, but it still makes it rather exciting to think about, Ian, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, this, because would it make the UK mobile network system worse? And ultimately, I'm kind of sort of in the mindset that it probably wouldn't. I think that the reason I say that is that there's already not enough choice. I've been through pretty much every mobile company. I was started on Cellnet, which then obviously became O2. I then moved to Vodafone and had a very bad time indeed with Vodafone, and then moved, I think that was when I then moved to Three. So I've essentially been around most of them now.
So that's two.
I suppose. I mean,
Orange, T-Mobile, EE.
I was with T-Mobile for a spell. When was that? So what did I do? Cellnet, then to Vodafone? No, it must have been Cellnet, T-Mobile. This isn't interesting. Anyway, but obviously mergers have happened and have complicated things. So from that perspective, I'm thinking, well, if I was going to switch again now, who am I going to go to? I had a terrible time when I was with O2, and that was when I had an iPhone originally. In my mind, that's still there. But I've done everyone else, so it kind of feels to me like maybe that's it. I think part of this, obviously, the reason Vodafone would be interested in Three is that Three has quite a lot of 5G spectrum. It prides itself in having this huge amount of available frequencies across a big range of the usable 5G spectrum. So from Vodafone's perspective, it would be looking, I think, to secure that spectrum, because that would be very useful to them. From that perspective, I can see the logic. I think you'd have to have some kind of, there'd have to be an agreement that it would give up some of its spectrum. So maybe there'd be room then for a smaller company to come in and launch, something. I don't know what form that would take. But I don't know. I mean, I find it quite difficult to get angry or concerned about this kind of merger now. They're all mega companies. Would it be better if there were some smaller local operations? Perhaps, you know, that's...
But then we have the MVNOs of the world. Your Tesco Mobiles, your Giffgaffs.
Yeah, but what do MVNOs really bring to the world? I mean,
discounts.
They bring slight... Yeah, they do. But then that's not going to go anywhere, is it? The MVNO situation is pretty much fixed. They are cheaper. I don't necessarily know why the main networks don't compete a bit more on price, because the MVNOs are essentially eating their lunch, although they're not losing out because they're selling the network, but they're not making money on the things that people might spend extras on. You know, maybe if mobile purchasing becomes more of a thing and, you know, people are more invested in it, then perhaps the money made from that will be more significant than the fees they take from monthly subscriptions or whatever. There's a lot going on in mobile for the future that might mean that, you know, there's more space for MVNOs to do more stuff and offer more services and maybe make themselves an even more valuable proposition whilst still doing more than just reselling Vodafone's service. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not... Vodafone is such an odd company because it has explored both selling itself and buying other things and never really seems to do anything about it. There was a lot of talk before about Virgin Media was going to buy Vodafone's UK operation and then sell a huge chunk of its European operations to, you know, because that company is a big American conglomerate. But nothing ever comes of it. Vodafone just plods along. It's pretty much the same business it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago when it launched. Was it 30 years? I can't remember. And we just, you know, we have this sort of quite staid, uninnovative company that doesn't really... It doesn't really excite anyone. It's just there. It's the network that your business is connected to, primarily, I would say. It's probably quite reliable. I'm not thinking to myself, well, you know, Vodafone, that's a really hip and happening company. I'd love to invest my money with them.
Well, on the topic of the MVNOs then, Nick in our live chat shared a screenshot of a mobile phone provider satisfaction survey. What a party it is to put that together, I'm sure, from which. And it suggests that Giffgaff and Tesco Mobile are top in terms of customer score for satisfaction. And I believe that for Giffgaff, one of the key things is its kind of, is it its support community? Because it's kind of...
Well, they don't have any actual staff, do they?
Yeah.
So it's all done by people who pay money to be some... to be customers, which is very odd.
But it means that it keeps the prices down and you still get decent call package rates. and it's an affordable way to get a decent package for not a lot of money.
Yeah, it's
and
basically O2 without any of the extra cost.
Yeah, and Tesco is next. So there is something to say, I think, for the popularity and competitive power of some of these MVNOs, even though they kind of depend on preferential rates from the main carriers, which do tend to be the EEs and O2s and Vodafones of the world. Now, we normally talk about feedback at the end of the show, but we did have an email that came in over the last week or so based on the conversation we were having about Virgin and O2 saying explicitly that it wasn't going to bring back roaming charges for British users. And this came in from Stephen, who says, "Hi, Nate and Ian. Do you really believe O2 and Virgin's no roaming charges policy? Didn't the others promise no roaming charges before Brexit?" That's the first part of his email.
Mm.
And the second part is, Ian really needs to dump Three. I remember him saying how crap Three was in London at least 3 years ago. I know this because I was on Three at the same time, visiting London and other English cities pre-COVID, and had the same issues with virtually unusable data.
So, yeah, he's not wrong.
2 points. Why are you still with Three?
Goes back to that, why I haven't launched a coup against the UK government. Just very lazy. I think what I'm probably going to do is I will maybe move everything to Virgin once my contract on broadband finishes. I think that's a couple of months' time. They're going to probably put my prices up because I'm paying very little at the moment. I think I'm only paying 30 quid a month. Which is cheap for 200 meg broadband with them.
Wait, so you're paying £30 a month for Virgin?
Yes, and £20 for
Three. It's a hell of a lot more than I'm paying.
Yes, I know that, but I don't have access to the service that you have, do I? So I can't do anything about that.
No, it's a joke. It's because I'm not with Virgin. So I pay
I see. I thought you were talking about your amazing deal with whoever it is you're with.
Which is
almost certainly £20 a month for unlimited gigabit.
No, it's £41 for unlimited gigabit up and down.
Anyway,
the point is, I was being facetious. Please continue.
Fine. No, I will. So I was thinking that probably the best approach to this would be to wait until my contract comes up, see what they're going to charge me, call them and go, right, well, okay, so I'd like a mobile with you. What deal can you do me on both and see what I get? Because it seems like if you've got both, you get unlimited data instead of limited data on the phone. You get the roaming if that's an issue, which it might be. It could work in my favour to move and to keep everything together. And maybe they'll offer me some deal on 500 meg or gigabit or something that I won't be able to say no to. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get tied up in a contract that lasts forever. But
Who wants a contract?
Well, no one does. And I've tried to avoid them where possible, which is one of the reasons I'm still with Three, because it's very, very difficult to get a good deal on a rolling 30-day contract now. If you're going to do pay-as-you-go, not pay-as-you-go because it's not, is it? If you want a good deal on EE or Vodafone or anyone else, you need to sign up for 12 to 24 months. And I just find that pointless. I'm not asking anything from them. All I want is a SIM card and an amount of data. I don't care about anything else. I don't want freebies. I don't want free Apple TV or free Spotify. I've already got those services. I just want cheap mobile data. That's
well,
what
maybe,
I care about.
Maybe someone else will buy Three. Maybe not Vodafone, maybe somebody else, who knows? And then
the thing is, your dreams can come true. It doesn't seem like that's the big problem. Three is too popular in cities. It's just overloaded. Because it's one of the cheapest, it has a decent range of services for a relatively sensible price. There's too many people on it in London. That's the problem, it's network congestion. It's not very much you can do about that. So therefore, I feel like whoever buys it is still going to have the same problems unless it's an existing network, which could be an argument for Vodafone.
Have you considered setting up your own?
All the time. I consider setting up my own electricity company once as well.
Tom Good did it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. If you only have a small number of subscribers, you don't need a license. Like, I could provide my street with electricity and not have a license for that. I think, or there's a small license that you can get for very small energy suppliers.
So by no license, you just mean a small license?
Well, it's not a license that you need to pay £100,000 for.
Ah.
It's a license, I think, that you can apply for, and I don't think there's a huge cost associated with it. I did weirdly look into this for some reason. I'm sure I have undiagnosed ADHD. My capacity for investigating pointless things to the nth degree is unrivaled, yet my ability to do useful things like overthrow the government is really limited.
No, I think you hit on the point earlier, is that you're just a very lazy man. That's all it is.
Yeah, but why am I lazy? I feel motivated in my brain.
Yeah.
But translating those thoughts into actions comes very difficult to me.
That's a shame. If anyone has any advice for how Ian can get out of his quagmire of inefficiencies, do let us know by emailing hello@uktechshow.com. Any thoughts on 3 and Vodafone, very welcome. And of course, any suggestions for how to get in onto a mobile network that makes him just a little less frustrated is also very welcome as well, I believe. I'm putting words into his mouth, but I'm pretty sure he'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Nate, the Home Office has started pushing its agenda against end-to-end encryption again. The campaign has been going for several years now, with the goal to persuade companies like Facebook to drop plans to encrypt messaging on its platform. WhatsApp, a Facebook product, is secured by end-to-end encryption and is considered one of the best implementations of it. But Messenger and Instagram direct messages are not. And the company is planning changes to them, I believe in 2023, which makes it one of the campaign targets. The argument is something like this: if we encrypt messages on platforms kids use, then we won't be able to monitor them for bad stuff. That might be grooming, or it might be bullying, or it might be anything else. But part of the problem with this horrific campaign, not to editorialize too much, is that it seems to be our tax money funding it, when it has very much the feeling of a special interest group pushing an agenda rather than a government agency. And if end-to-end encryption is so bad and the government is in charge, why not make it illegal? Well, I guess because it would make the UK look like an even bigger laughing stock than it already is. And it would be impossible to regulate, and it would damage the safety of all. Because end-to-end encryption is the cornerstone of things like VPNs, banking applications, the secure web, etc., etc. And you'd have to have a law that just said messaging services can't use end-to-end encryption, which is useless. So instead, they're trying to stir up public outrage, or at least that's what I think. And to some extent, it might be working. Barnardo's and Safe2Net have both signed on to promote this campaign, which was seen on Twitter this week. In a BBC story, which you'll find linked in the show notes, of course, the Home Office is quoted as saying, "Our view is that online privacy and cyber security must be protected, but these are compatible with safety measures that can ensure the detection of child sexual exploitation and abuse." It didn't explain how. Nate, I would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I have quite a lot of thoughts, but the first thing that sprung to mind actually was when I saw that what is it? It's the ICO, isn't it? Information Commissioner's Office. Basically has come out and said that end-to-end encryption actually strengthens children's online safety and is essentially against the government campaign. You know, this is the ICO. This is the UK's data watchdog.
Yeah.
And it doesn't think this is a particularly good idea that the Home Office has had. It does seem as well like they've spent quite a lot of money on this. I've seen figures anywhere between about £500,000 and £700,000 for it. And they call it, what's it, the No Place to Hide campaign. That's what it is, isn't it?
I would have suggested that we play the clip, but unfortunately it's not very audio-centric. It's a visual messaging chain. And so we can link it in the show notes, but there's nothing to really hear. But yeah, it's got that kind of dramatic kind of, you know, the kind of music you'd get on a, you know, the world is coming to an end, spies are happening, kind of thing.
And it really rings bells of that, you wouldn't defecate in a policeman's helmet campaign from a while back, wasn't it?
Or
you
very wouldn't, you much wouldn't, like that.
You wouldn't steal a baby from a car. Why should you steal Metallica's music from Napster? It's sort of in that vein of things, isn't it? But this time it's with the Think of the Children hat on, and there's for and against it, and I think the good intention exists, just the execution is horrific. But I in cases like this, I always tend to defer back to you, Ian, as the one of the two of us that actually has kids who have phones, who has a slightly more grounded opinion on this sort of thing just by virtue of that. So what is your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to answer that question by reading you an email from the school that my daughter goes to. And this will give it some context, because I remain very certain that encryption is the right decision. I care very deeply about my children and all children being safe. But I read you this, and you'll see immediately why my blood ran cold.
Okay. I haven't heard this, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
I didn't put it in the thing. I'll cut it down a bit. There's primarily a group of year 7 and year 8 pupils that, for the most part, are having chats that you'd expect from such a year. However, there has also been instances of racist and homophobic language, and at least one image of a sexual act between an adult male and a young child. Now, I can tell you that any person would probably feel appalled by reading that sentence. And as a parent of a child at that school, doubly so, probably. This is what's at stake here. However, I am absolutely now at pains to point out this is a WhatsApp group. It had 200 kids in it from local schools. But the children did the right thing. They mentioned it to somebody, and the parents got involved, and they spoke to the school. The school has spoken to the police. It will be investigated, and hopefully something will happen about it, because that's very disturbing. The problem, of course, is that if that happens once and a child sees an image like that, the damage is done, and that's horrifying. So that's a huge issue, but it will not be solved by removing encryption from WhatsApp. This would be a problem on Telegram, which doesn't really have any encryption, particularly not in group chats. You know, there will always be somewhere for people to be, you know, behave appallingly, and you know, it's there's no stopping it. You can't do anything about it. So the reaction, obviously, of parents is to be like, as soon as the government comes along and says WhatsApp's encrypted, we can't stop this from happening in advance. I'm not interested in that argument, because they can't stop it from happening anywhere. They can't stop it from happening on MSN Messenger from 20 years ago. They can't stop it from happening on whatever quantum service appears 20 years from now. You know, the problem will always be that there are some kids who think, you know, racist and homophobic language is acceptable because that's the way they've been brought up and they don't know any better. There'll be some people who will post images that they found somewhere. We can't do anything about it. You know, something awful on the internet, or, you know, all those other forums that were very popular back in the 2000s, you know, had all this kind of horrible stuff, and more. And it requires a certain kind of person to go and look for it. And of course, those people are children at some point, and they're curious and stuff. So, yeah, it's an impossible argument to win for me, because I just don't believe that removing encryption will have any impact.
So in the example that you gave, and you said that was in a WhatsApp group, 200 kids, two things came to mind when you were speaking. The first is that pushing people to smaller platforms, it could help in that it takes a very long time for a critical mass of users to move to that platform. You know, one of the reasons that platforms like WhatsApp and Instagram are so sticky is because everybody uses it. And with these days, it's harder and harder for people to just en masse up and leave. Certainly when it comes to just pure communication, perhaps not entertainment so much, hence see TikTok. But for messaging, they're pretty sticky. But the other thing that I thought is, how would that have played out were WhatsApp not end-to-end encrypted?
Would it make a difference, would it?
Well, that's what I was thinking. Is that you could, presumably, whoever circulated that the offending image, the particularly bad one that you mentioned, I'm not talking about the language, but although this actually would apply to both, you know, it's attached to a phone number, an account, And yes, they can be spoofed. Yes, they can be burner phones or what have you. But somebody still has to have invited that person into the group. So somebody knows who that person is. And therefore, at some point, you interview enough people, the truth will come out, whether or not it's encrypted.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, I suppose the point is... I had a chat with my daughter straight after I got this email. We were chatting on WhatsApp because obviously she doesn't live with me full time, so I communicate with her on text messaging a lot of the time. And I just said to her, I didn't want to make a big deal of it. I just said, "Oh, I've had this email from your school about messages," and I knew that her mum would have checked the phone anyway because she's very good with that kind of thing. So as he said, yes, mum's checked. I'm not in it. I'm only in groups of five, and it's just friends and stuff like that. The emphasis for all this stuff has to be on parents. They have to have that kind of relationship with their children. If you're going to give your kid a phone, you have to make it quite clear to them that they're not going to have any privacy around it, not till they're sort of a reasonable age. I suppose 16 is a reasonable age. It'll be like, we're going to check this just to make sure nothing weird's going on. It's not about spying or anything. And I'm not interested in reading their messages. They're god awful. The things they find funny at that age are just ludicrous.
Well, I've been on social media enough to know that I don't even understand half the things that kids
no
say.
Exactly. So I think parents have to take responsibility, and they have to say, right, this is, we can't just let our children have uninterrupted access to these things without checking in on them. It's good, obviously, that there's enough children on this group for someone to have said something to someone, which is great. That's what we need to encourage. It needs to be that's the takeaway from this, rather than anything else, because you'll never be able to stop it. As long as the internet exists, that material is out there, and it's horrible. And there might be things that we can do with the wider internet, and encryption probably does make that a little bit more challenging. But at the end of the day, we can't put the cork back in the bottle. Encryption is a thing now. I put a note on the show notes about, do you remember when years ago, Pretty Good Privacy, PGP, was announced for email? And at the time, it was 128-bit encrypted. And the US government said that anything over 48-bit encryption was a munition and therefore could not be exported from the US without a license. And Phil Zimmerman, the inventor of PGP, found himself the subject of a criminal investigation around that. So this has been going on for a really long time. PGP and encryption in general has been seen as a threat to governments, because we're at a point in this country, and I would avoid getting too political, but the fact is that the government is seeking to quell people's ability to protest at the moment. And I do not believe that you can take these things in isolation. This battle against encryption is tied to the Home Office's battle against people being allowed to protest. There is a dark ebb to this that I do not believe is anything to do with children. I believe it's to do with the control of people. And unfortunately, they're not going to win it, because people are not going to give up on their right to have private encrypted chats that people can't read.
Well, if anyone listening has been stoked by Ian's thoughts here, do let us know. I think this is a very important topic to debate. There are always relevant and interesting points for and against. It just so happens that most of ours tend to be quite well informed and therefore quite often against. You can let us know any thoughts or indignations you have by emailing us hello@uktechshow.com. I did want to take a quick moment, as always, to thank our patrons for supporting us directly, such as Mark Bug. I apologise. I'm sure that's not how you pronounce your surname. DW and Carl Jakeman this week. You can join them and get the full version of Text Message ad-free. Join our live audience for every recording and get our sister show Extra Message. And you can learn more at patreon.com/UKTech. And if you're one of them, you're about to hear this week's third discussion story, all about Microsoft and Activision. Let's check in with one of our favourite people who isn't on the show today. His name is Tom Merritt. He does Daily Tech News Show. And on Daily Tech News Show, they've been talking about everything else that we haven't talked about this week in the wider tech world. Tom.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, I think we figured out Microsoft's future strategy if its acquisition of Activision Blizzard is approved, and it involves a carrot and a stick for Sony, and an expectation that all future gaming is going to be mostly streaming. Plus, Jonathan Strickland from iHeartMedia helped us understand there's some work to be done before NFTs will work in the metaverse like Heroes Katana does in Neal Stephenson's novel Snow Crash. And was Google being unfair, giving people 10 years to transition off of its free plan before making them pay for it next September? We guess Ian would say yes, they were being unfair, and some of our panel would agree with my fictional Ian, but not all of them. All of that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Fictional Ian.
Yes.
Well, go on then. What do you think? Should Google have just said if you're on the free tier, you can keep it for life?
Yeah.
There you go. For a more comprehensive understanding of Ian's opinion, go and listen to Fake Ian on DTNS.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Well, if you've enjoyed this episode, do consider backing us to get our full-length version. There's no ads. You can listen live. You get extra message. You get a whole bunch of other stuff. Find out more. Patreon.com/UK Tech. Or, as Ian, I'm sure, agrees with me, the other way of doing it is to leave us a free review, or rather, leave us a review for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
I would agree. And it's been a while since anyone's done that. So if you haven't and you'd like to, it's a big help and we'd love to hear from you.
We really would. It would be just splendid of you. Until next time, people, toodle pip.